How's it going?
And glorious Technicolor. I'm good. How are you? What's your
Good.
name?
Joey.
Joey, nice to meet you.
Yeah. And you, Jim Bob? Jim Bob's
Thank you, sir.
your name, is it? Well, that's what I'll
It's
call you.
my official nickname, yes.
Where are you
And where
based?
are you? Are you in Dublin?
I'm in Dublin, yeah.
Cool. I'm in Swansea.
Oh, very good. I went to uni in Cardiff.
Ah, cool. I did some time in Cardiff as well.
Yeah, whereabouts?
I was in Uyck.
Oh, so was I.
Like we're
What did you do
talking
there?
graphic design.
Wow. I
What did you
did
do in the Uyck?
leisure and sports management because
Oh, right.
it was the only course in UCAS that had sports in it. And I said, yep, that'll do. And now I work in a bank. It's funny, isn't it?
Right.
How life.
Yeah,
Life pans out.
but you have mayhem and people on your wall, and hey, you're keeping it real, obviously.
That's it. That's Gal from Gorgoroth
Oh
on the
yeah,
left.
Gal,
And that's
yeah.
Frost from Satyricon on the left. So yeah, I've had a good little musical meetings with people, such as your good
Yeah.
self.
Well, thank you, sir. You don't sound Irish or Welsh either.
No, I'm originally from Bournemouth.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I've been here coming up 11 years now.
Do you remember the cutting rooms
Cutting rooms. Where was that?
in Bournemouth?
No, that was before my time.
Okay.
Oh.
That was the first English show that Taint played, Taint being my long running
Yeah.
previous band, well, previous but one band, in fact. We played with Snub,
Oh,
which was,
Snub, Chof. Chof, the lead
Chuff, yeah,
singer. Yeah.
exactly.
It's funny. I was having an English listening back party of like all the old school bands of like Earth Tone 9, Stamping Ground, Snub, all those.
Yeah, because
Jesus, man.
Taint was active, from 94, well, until 2010. But in that time, with all of those bands you just listed, Taint was doing its first three demo tapes end of the 90s, and then the first, well, it was actually a debut album, but Household Name Records at the time insisted on marketing it as a mini album just because of the amount of songs, but our songs were long, so
Yeah.
it was actually about 42 minutes long. But being the punk type guy that Lil is from Household Name, he was like, oh yeah, let's call it a debut mini CD. Okay,
Yeah.
whatever you want.
It's actually funny
We
you
were
mentioned
not
that.
sorry, go on.
Sorry, it's funny you mentioned that because like obviously we're talking about your new band Silverburn today and the album Self-Induced Transcendental Annihilation, which I will be referring to as CETA going forward, because it's a mouthful. But the first thing I noticed, because my friend and I have been Taint fans for a while, well, since you were
Oh,
active,
amazing.
and we were saying the different one of the main differences is the songs for Silverburn are a lot more shorter and to the throat. Is that and it's like usually, as people get older, they mellow out a bit. You went completely the opposite direction. Were you just like had this anger in you or something?
Yes. Quite frankly, yes, that's exactly it. I think one of the only conscious things I knew once I'd finished writing the first song, Annihilation, in its demo, digital demo form, once that song was written, and with that very brutal first riff,
Yeah.
once I'd finished that song, I thought, okay, fuck it. The only, I guess, on one hand, I allowed it to be an aggressive album, but the only sort of conscious decision was, okay, there's going to be like, no intros. There's going to be all the songs are going to be, bar Etheric Crush, which is 7 minutes, and I allowed that to be like the sort of longer,
Yeah.
the long song. But everything else, I knew I was going to keep to like 3.5 minutes max. That was only like that was pretty much the only kind of conscious decision, other than also, I suppose, saying to myself, you know what, I'm gonna draw on influences that my previous bands weren't really able to draw on so
Yeah.
much. I mean, I think there was always certain signatures within my guitar playing and riff style and writing style. I think that thread carries throughout Taint and Hark and into Silverburn. But yeah, more just kind of like knowing I wasn't just gonna let it become some kind of like drawn out prog rock odyssey or whatnot, you know?
And I think it's important to mention at this point about the album itself, for people who may not have heard it or may not be aware of Silverburn. This album is wicked, and you should check it out straight away if you get the chance. If you're a fan of the likes of, and I don't mean to be disrespectful when I mention these bands because it's your baby, but the likes of there's Neurosis in this, there's Mastodon in this. It's an absolute whopper of an album. And when I was out running today listening to it, and just the waves of like Mastodon on the track, Pain Body, just absolutely love that. And the opening track obviously is just Neurosis heavy. So it's brilliant. I think that was more just of a statement rather than anything else. But have you actually had much reaction from people like coming up to you or on social media or whatever?
Well, thanks for saying all of that. And first of all, I'm not offended one iota by comparisons to Neurosis or Mastodon, because both of those bands have been influential to me, absolutely. I'm sorry, what was that question again? I just brain farted that
You're
last
fine.
question.
Have you seen much reaction from people about the album?
I mean, we've had a lot of, or the album has had a lot of really great reviews, which has been like a bonus, really, because I genuinely did make this album for me. And I really didn't give a shit about so many other aspects of in what happens when you make an album. And I actually returned to far more of a no fucks given attitude that I had circa like 2002, 3, 4, when I was writing the Taint Ruin of Nova Roma album. And I'd lost sight of that, I think, because by the time I had transitioned through into Hark and it was a whole new band, we signed to a bigger label, Season of Mist, at that time. And as much as they're a decent label and they're good people actually, and there's no sense of like there was no fallout between myself and Season of Mist, for example. But also, I have to sort of realize like, maybe there were certain aspects of what went into Hark where I started to just simply care too much. And in my personal journey within these last few years, I just started to realize like, whoa, hang on a minute. I cared way too much. What happened to this writing for yourself, zero fucks energy that I used to have? I almost kind of like gradually started to remember what it was like being the older me, or well, the younger me, but some time ago now. And I'd lost track of that. I'd lost track of myself. I'd gone out of alignment with my true self, and which then also feeds into why Hark ultimately dissolved, because it was all wrong, man. I wasn't. We tried expanding that band to a four piece, and it didn't work for a few reasons in my view. So this was about, I did a lot of inner work before even beginning the Silver Bit material. I did a lot of time alone. I'd had like a lot of, well, let's see, 4 or 5 years off of playing music whatsoever at that point. Oh no, actually, sorry, let's be, to be more accurate, 2.5 years of not touching any kind of instrument immediately after the end of Hark. So I got certain aspects of my career into a better place as well regarding my tattooing and my artwork and illustration. So I had to do a lot of rebuilding within myself first and foremost. And as you probably read in the bio, it was the COVID environment in of itself which then sparked the initial thing of like, okay, hang on a minute, I think I'm gonna start writing again, So yeah, that's a bit of a long answer to your question, I think.
Did you fall out of love with music at the end of Hark?
Yeah, I
Just
did.
like because I know I have days where I will sorry days I have weeks where I'm like I just don't want to listen. I've no interest, and
Yeah.
it's hard to explain because music is so important for the likes of us. You know, it
Yeah,
gets your mood going. So you just fell
exactly.
out of love with it and just down tools and just said.
Yeah. It wasn't even within my conscious capability to even pull a guitar out of its case and start playing. For those 2.5 years from like 2017 till what, 19 or almost 20, it just wasn't even in my, I was. That was the last thing I wanted to do because Hark was a hardworking band for its 7 years, and there was a few trials and tribulations along the way, and a few personality dynamics which became increasingly unhealthy, and so all of that combined with the sort of business and industry and touring element of it, man, if you combine all of that stuff up, it's enough to chew somebody up, and I certainly allowed myself to get chewed up by it. So it did make me fall out of love with music, quite frankly.
And so when you put Silverburn together or did like the demos or whatever and had the finish, like obviously it was a clean slate, like a fresh palette, canvas, sorry. Did you, because of the difference between your previous bands and this album, although there's obviously some similarities between it, were you at the mindset of like, do you know what? I'm not gonna focus on this part of the mix or this riff here, but you're just sort of like throwing it onto a canvas and going, this is me now, and you can take it or leave it.
Kind of, but I mean, on one hand, yeah, there was a similar energetic approach to what you've just described, but in terms of like the process, it was a bit more like just laying, like a builder builds a wall, and you've got the first layer of bricks, and then the next, and then the next, and then the next. It was like that. So, I didn't know how any of it was going to turn out until gradually you're halfway through track one, and you're like, holy shit, this is like some brutal double kick drum riff followed by some New York hardcore groove, followed by some off-kilter like mathcore riff change or whatever, and you're like, fuck, okay, I didn't know this was really going to happen. And then you find yourself, you're halfway through making song number two, and you're like, oh yeah, shit, I want to do some like cymbal grab stab intro bits with like a dead guy riff, and then I don't know what's going to follow. But then by the end of the song, you're like, oh right, so I've just kind of made a little mini homage to Knut, my friends from Geneva, the Swiss, kind of what, however you want to describe Knut, but a very influential band, and they influenced quite a few moments on this album. and they're good friends of mine, ex-touring partners. Very inspiring band. But yeah, so in that sense, you just feel your way through it and feel your way through it, and what comes out comes out. And as I've said a few times recently, a good song writes itself. You just have to be open to receive it. And that's where, you know, the nucleus of all of the songs came from my drum patterns. And my drum patterns come to me either late at night before bed or first thing in the morning when I'm just getting out of bed. I'll have something like, it's almost like a kind of, because I'm ADHD, I've been, you know, diagnosed only a couple of years ago, ADHD. Chances are I'm quite possibly on one or two of the other ASD spectrums, you know, given certain familial traits that I have in my line. And so, yeah, like the drum patterns, I think to me are almost like a bordering on like a tick.
Right, okay.
And it's so if I wake up and I've got this like an idea just kind of just appears in my mind, I'm like, oh yeah, so, and then I'll just beatbox that drum pattern into my phone with my mouth, and I've got like album number two pretty much all there as we speak, by the way. But so you know, if I'm just naturally like receiving these drum patterns with, you know, at night or in the morning, and I make a quick voice note of them, and then I'm stemming all of the songwriting off of those drum patterns, then I don't know how anything's going to turn out, really. But then, as I previously just described, it's kind of like you find yourself, okay, you put one drum pattern down, and then, I know I'm somewhat tangenting here, but you know, when it came to maybe, for example, I'll put two drum patterns next to each other, like an A and a B. I'm like, okay, there's riff one and riff two. Then the guitar side of things, that's just the most quick, intuitive,
okay,
pull it out of the ether thing, you know, almost to the point where I was thinking, oh, am I allowing myself to write a little bit too simplistically on the guitar for this thing? But then also I realized, no, it's all good. You know, the drum patterns are dynamic, and I've felt like I've always written songs to be quite dynamic in that sense anyway, with you know, rhythm changes, tempo changes, etc. So yeah, I kind of allowed myself to be a little bit more freed up on the guitar side of things, not overthink it. I don't really care for people who try and cram too many notes, and they overthink a riff, they'll overcook it, and it just ends up becoming like a fret exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no, I'll just lay something on top of that drum track, and it'll fit, and it'll work, and it'll draw from my core influences, and that, I think that therein lies my identity as a guitarist and a songwriter.
And you did you record all the instruments, drums, guitar, bass for this album?
Yes, sir, I did, yes.
And so I'm going to come on to the fact you played Arctangent recently, which,
yeah,
is a fantastic festival, by the way. But when you came to pick in a live band, because you sort of say, you know, I'm not really sure if you're a perfectionist or not when it comes to this, like, but I imagine because you gave birth to this, what was the process of choosing live members to play your music?
Yeah, good questions and well put. And am I a perfectionist? Maybe, but only in the sense that it's not that I seek a perfectly rendered or mathematically sound result. It's more like I just want to make sure that I'm achieving the vision of the art. But my guitar playing is scruffy. My sense of drumming is, I'm not the best guitarist in the world. I'm not certainly not the best drummer in the world, and I'm not the best vocalist in the world. But I just want to be sure that anything I'm doing that fully achieves like the emotion and therefore the sort of final vision that I've already got in mind. So if there are imperfections within that, then fine, because I'm not fucking, I'm not like a cut and paste AI session musician, shred lord, wannabe dimebag motherfucker. Guys like that are ten a penny, and they don't have any identity of their own, So, and I know I'm not one of those sorts of players. I'm an artist, and if I have to call myself a guitarist and a drummer as well, then I suppose I can do that. But I'm an artist at the end of the day. I could equally make like a the next album could be some kind of heavy dub drum and bass dark wave album for all I know.
It's so funny you say that because it was one of my questions. We'll ask it anyway because you've sort of segued into it. But you've had Taint and Hark, and now you're on to Silverburn. Is Silverburn going to be your main focus now, or is there a part of you, another side of you, that would like to do another project, such as a ambient electro? Do you know what I mean? Something like that.
Exactly. I do want to do another Silverburn album in the same way, because I know I can do it now, and it's been massively rewarding, and it's made my drumming step up a level, which I always wanted it to do. So I feel like I almost owe it to myself to do another record like this, because I love drumming. I absolutely love it, and it was falling by the wayside for years. So that was a big motivation for this, was to have that reason to improve my home, digital demoing, music production capabilities, my drumming, the video work, the digital cover painting for the album cover itself, which quite different to my other work. But and also just to quickly get back to that previous initial question was, how did I choose personnel for
Yes.
this? Well, first of all, Adam, my live drummer and friend, came to me because our mutual friend had said, you should speak to Jim, he's doing this thing. And Adam's a fantastic drummer, and he does a band called They Live, We Sleep, which is generally a lot more of a fast band, kind of the whole HM2 vibe, the Trap Them and Black Breath-ish, and post anything post Entombed and Converge with an HM2 pedal. But he's excellent. He's excellent at what he does, and they're a good band. But he was looking to do something a bit different, so he actually came to me first, which became more of a an impetus to actually get keep the momentum going with the songwriting and the demoing. And then, so we had this dialogue going. I was always taking my drums to the rehearsal room where Adam actually works, and he would sit in a little bit and watch me gradually improving my abilities to play along with the tracks. I was either running the tracks through the PA in the room, or eventually I got my first set of in-ears, so I was doing it that way. And Adam became like a really inspiring energy to keep me going with and make sure I finished this album. So that was another equally beautiful thing I'm super grateful for. And then Ross, our bass player, he's an old like kind of like an old scene friend who used to play in a band called Blunt Side that Taint used to play with in the late 90s. And he came to me for a tattoo, and we both are big Converge fans, and he happened to ask me for a Converge tattoo. So that very day after we did the tattoo, I played him some of the demos just out of my phone, and I said, "Are you even playing?" I had no clue if he's was playing or had been playing, and he pretty much had 14 years of not doing anything musical at all. He became a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt badass coach in that time as well, which is pretty incredible. And then sure enough, he was super up for doing it. So then we gradually started jamming, or practicing the songs together. Before I think I was just about finishing like the last two songs of the eight song demos, and then gradually was started talking to Geffen Pearson, my producer, and started planning the recording session. And then it's like self-imposed deadline after self-imposed deadline, and then your accountability locks in, and then you've got no choice but to just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it and make sure that you get it done. And yeah.
How good was it playing Arctangent then?
It was great. It's a great festival. Hark had played there twice. James Scarlett, the head honcho, lovely guy. He actually booked Silver Burn off the strength of one of the demo tracks.
No way.
And that was actually no vocals on those demos at all. So, but he believed in the material, and he obviously knew my resume or whatnot, my CV. And I said, "Look, dude, I've got two guys who are nailing this with me in the rehearsal room already. I can guarantee you we'll take people's heads off." And but ultimately he enjoyed the song that I sent him. So, and then
Wicked.
sure enough, on the day we did take people's heads off, because that's what Silver Burn is designed to do.
What was the turnout like? Because I flew in that day, or I had an interview with someone and I missed your set.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Oh, the turnout. I think there was a clash with who was it? These Kirsty's Metal Hands, which are the dudes
Oh,
from
Conjurer and
Conjurer and Pin, I think. I forget how
Pin,
you say it.
yeah. I always say it pine, but I think it is pin.
Yeah, like gin or whatnot.
The silent J.
So that was, I mean, I think it's always good to be modest slash flexible with it, with any expectation you might have to play festivals, certainly it being your second ever show. But there was like, I don't know, a few hundred people in there. It
Nice.
was certainly not empty, and there was a real nice response, and some good friends gave me some good, honest feedback, and it was legitimately really, really positive. So it felt really good at the time. It was a lot of fun.
And then you went on to do a few shows with Mutoid Man. Am I right in saying that?
Yes. We just did London and Bristol with those guys.
Which is real credit to the strength of this album that,
Yeah.
because correct me if I'm wrong, the album came out on the same weekend as Arctangent.
That's right. Yeah.
And then,
Yeah.
like, a month or a few weeks later, you're out supporting Mutoid Man doing London. Like, that must be a really good feeling for you to sit there and be playing those shows.
It does feel good, and but I feel like a friend of a friend at Arctangent said in passing, he was like, "Oh, it's not bad. Playing Arctangent is your second show. That's not bad, is it?" I'm like, "Yeah, no, I'm really grateful for it. But when you put a hell of a lot of work and keep a quality level, you don't let that quality level dip, and you put a lot of genuine emotion and heart and soul into something, then people can't ignore it, and then you will receive opportunities that equals what you've put into that." if you're gonna put some kind of half-assed band together playing some washed-out vanilla, boring, whatever kind of stuff, or fifth generational wannabe stoner prog rock or whatever, which starts to sound like an AI is, really done a bad job of calculating and producing it for you. If you're gonna just throw a band together like that as an example, then you shouldn't really expect to get certain levels of opportunities cast in your direction. But so in that sense, I feel like it's just deserves. I have a resume, I have a CV, and I don't mean this to sound conceited, but the main thing really is the intention, energy, and relentless hard work that was put into this Silverburn album over 2.5 years of non-stop work. And that's juggling it with my day job work as well, So I was dragging my drum kit to the rehearsal room every weekend and back up into my flat at the end of each session. And I'm so glad I did that because I love my drum kit. And it felt like the attitude was like going out and chopping wood and making sure you've got wood to burn that night. Because if you don't, you're going to be cold, So that's what went into this album. So yes, we did play Arctangent, and yes, we did play Mutoid Man, and I think we were absolutely more than worthy of playing these shows. And I have zero fucks to give, as you can tell.
I agree. I think you definitely earned the right to be there. So
Thank you.
what are we now? September, October? September, isn't it?
Yes.
What's the plans? Any more gigs lined up, or is there a tour, mini tour next year, or what's Silverburn's future plans?
Yeah, so we've got we're going to play with Conjurer in Cardiff in a week or
Oh,
two. Oh, no, in about a week from now.
nice.
So that'll be fun because I never got to play directly with them in Taint or Hark. So I think that's going to be mutually fun. And then in October on the 13th, we go over to Nijmegen in Holland to play the Soul Crusher Festival. With Cult of Luna and Alcest and
Oh.
a bunch of other bands. So again, I am grateful for these opportunities, of course. But at the same time, it's to
You,
me, it's
you,
kind of,
you've earned your place. You've earned your right to
yeah,
be
but
there.
it's kind of like business as usual in a sense, again, without wanting to like underplay anything but it's like, yeah, I'm used to this. This is what I did. I took Taint to be able to do those kinds of things. I took Hark to be able to do those kinds of things. And here we are, Silverburn's doing exactly the same thing straight out of the gate. Because I don't know, yeah, maybe it's an ADHD thing or whatever, but I often find it hard to sort of see what the limitation of something is or the scale of something is. And I think that results in a kind of a work ethic, which makes me kind of put absolutely everything into something. If I'm going to do something, I'll do it properly. And and I suppose another aspect of this album was, I was not interested in collaborating with anyone. I was not interested in, it took enough kind of energy and trust for me to even allow it to become a live band, actually, because it's like, okay, I've been here two major times before in my life, and now I have to do this again, and I better be sure that me and these dudes respect each other and get along with each other, and that there's no hidden agendas as I've experienced in the past. But no, I took that leap, and the trust is there, and the respect is there. But yeah, I certainly wasn't making this album just to do a band, if you see what I mean. I made this album to make an album on my own in a rebuilding, healing process.
So you do see longevity in this band then? I mean, you already said you've pretty much album two written or demoed. Like, do you see this being now two, three, four albums down the line?
I mean, when I said that earlier, I was actually referring to a whole bunch of drum ideas that I've got.
Oh,
So,
sorry. Okay.
no, that's okay. Yeah, as in mean, therefore meaning like I've got enough drum ideas to start building a whole new album. So, but yeah, you know, me and Adam and Ross are all open to touring, even though the entire touring industry is so difficult these days. But our philosophy is like we'll do things as long as it makes sense logistically, financially, etc. In the past, I know what it's like to come back from tour after tour, broke, you know, kind of squatting in your parents for like the third time in your life, where you really, really ought to be living at your own. By your own means at that point. So a lot of sacrifice went into those previous experiences, and I don't want to do that again myself, and I don't want Adam Ross to have to kind of like really compromise our home lives and our you know personal income and whatnot. You know, we're not young, we're not 22-year-old young bucks anymore. You know, so yeah, we do want to go out and do some cool stuff as long as it makes sense in every kind of way. So you, we'll see, but yeah, it would be nice to do some more good shows, good lineups, festivals, and a tour or two anytime from, you know, February, March onwards, realistically. So you know, I'm putting my feelers out. I'm having conversations with certain people, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we are
Brilliant.
open to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, the shows have felt great, and it's been really fun to play this material live, and I think it really does crush live. And even just, you know, I've gone for a more high gain tone for this project than Taint and Hark, and even just being able to like do some chugs live on stage, chugging with some high gain amp and tone and guitar settings, and have Adam peeling off the double kick stuff because he's so good at that. You know, it's like cool. I never thought I'd end up doing a band that would be able to do this. And so super fun for me in that sense, because it's just so different. And yeah, I kind of feel like the direction that Hark started to take on that second album, it was just watering itself down, and you know, the vision was lost, and my vision was compromised. You know, I hold my hand up to that too, but other aspects of the collective also. You know, I felt it, cumulatively or collectively, it just was just a bit weak, really. So it's nice to come back with something that's completely potent in every strike of that plectrum, or every strike of that stick on the drum, or every bass rake that Ross is now doing live. Everything counts. The songwriting. Yeah, it all counts. There's no vanilla half-assed shit in this record, that's for sure.
I mean, like, obviously with the Hark ending, things in life, some things come to an end,
Yeah,
because for
of
whatever
course.
reason. And I mean, without sounding too harsh to Hark, it's great that you've come out and released this brilliant album and,
Thank you.
found for
Thank you.
yourself, found your love
Absolutely.
and passion for music,
Yeah.
which is great to see from a fan. Like I said, from Taint days, I was a fan of that. And just hearing you talk about you playing with Snob and in
Yeah,
Bournemouth
yeah.
just brought back so many
Wow,
happy
yeah.
memories. So
That's amazing. Yeah, I didn't expect us to have that little bit of commonality at all.
Yeah. And we both went to the same university together.
Yeah,
It's
right.
insane.
Maybe not together. I mean, was it at the exact same time?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you my age on live on TV.
That's fine.
No, I'm
That's fine.
39.
Let's keep it a mystery.
I'm
You're 39.
39. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm older than you.
Okay. So
Yeah.
I was living in Roath Park at the time on the
Okay,
Newport
cool.
Road.
I know. Yeah. But yeah,
But do
no,
you
thank
want?
you for that. Thank you for that sentiment, and everything you just said there means a lot. And yes, I'm obviously very glad that previous band ended, and it probably should have ended a little bit sooner. But you know, I don't need to talk about that stuff anymore.
No, you're no.
But yeah, the now is where we're at, and you know, thank you for the sentiment and the supportive words. It means a lot, man, because you were a stranger until 40 minutes ago, and now you're
Yeah.
no longer a stranger.
And hopefully I will get to catch you at a show at some point in the near future.
Yeah.
And we can have a chat face to face and
That'd be great.
talk about all that. But in the meantime, Jacob, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Congrats on the album. And again, if you've not listened to this new album, people, you need to check it out. It's wicked. It is. Just listen to it. I won't go too much into it. But Jim Bob, all the best, and thank you so much again, mate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Likewise, means a lot. Appreciate it. And yeah, we'll see you another time.
Fingers crossed. Thank you, man.
Yeah. Likewise. Take care.
See ya.
Cheers, man.
Bye.